CTBK is more than just a full-service accounting firm. They are one team with an innovative approach to accounting and rise to each new challenge with collaborative problem-solving skills. CTBK goes above and beyond by lending helping hands in the Buffalo and Niagara community through volunteer work and donations, and is partnered up with Victory Sports for 2020 and 2021 to keep kids in the community active. The professionals at CTBK are determined to help individuals and businesses succeed. Whether a large corporation, a small business, or somewhere in between, call CTBK at 716-630-2400. Again, 716-630-2400, and see what CTBK's one-team approach can do for you.
Welcome to another edition of Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants. I'm Tim Graham of The Athletic, here with my co-host, Jonah Bronstein of Bronstein Sports Plus. And we are joined also by Matt Verderam. He is of the Patreon podcast, and he's prouder of that than he is of his other work. So I'll mention it first. The Matt Verderam Show. Check it out. It's Chiefs leaning. So my Western New York populated audience might want to go hate listen, or you want to get behind enemy lines. You want to find out what's going on in Arrowhead Stadium. You want to listen to Matt's podcast. But if you are from Western New York and a Bills fan, you probably know Matt's work a little bit more from Sports Illustrated. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. We do talk plenty about the Bills because they're one of the best teams in the AFC. In fact, I actually just did a little bit on their win total the other day, which those came out last week. But I'm sure during the course of the year, we will have, whether it be yourself or Matt Parrino or Nate Geary, plenty of guys I know from Buffalo. I went to school only a few hours from Buffalo, grew up in New York. So, you know, plenty of Bills media, Bills fans, and there's plenty to talk about. They're certainly one of the teams that going to be involved, I would imagine, the 2024 season.
Matt, how much do Chiefs fans talk about the Bills? Obviously, it is heavy conversation going the other way because that's the team to beat, doing whatever we can to get past the Chiefs. And the Bills can do it. They have done it. They just don't do it in the playoffs. They are probably the team, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but probably the team that scares Chiefs fans the most. What's the conversation going the other way? What is Chiefs Kingdom's thought on what's happening in Buffalo?
I think the two teams in the AFC that Chiefs fans respect the most and have a healthy fear of are Buffalo and Cincinnati. The Bengals have given the Chiefs a lot of problems. I mean, Burrow's 3-1 in his career against them. So they've been a thorn in Kansas City's side. Lou Anarumo has done a really good job of giving the offense fits. I think with Buffalo, the fear is much more around Allen. And it's much more, and look, the guy can just have a game where you can't stop him. And there's nothing you're doing. And Mahomes has got to be able to match and or exceed it. And, you know, I think that's what we saw a couple of years ago in that 13 seconds game. The two of them, I would argue, put on the best quarterback clinic I've ever seen in my life between both of them. I mean, you couldn't play any better. I think, you know, when you look at the Bills, they're there all the time. I mean, the Chiefs have played them 3 out of the last 4 years in the playoffs. And look, the first time, okay, the Chiefs pulled away in the AFC title game. The Bills were just kind of coming on the scene. The last two games, you couldn't get much closer. I mean, they've come right down to it. So, you know, like any fan base, I think there's always that smack talk back and forth. But I think the reality is, Chiefs fans know, look, the path to the Super Bowl, it's Buffalo and it's Cincinnati, and to some degree, it's Baltimore.
How is everybody handling the Rashee Rice situation?
I think with concern, for sure. I think trying to wait and see what the facts are. You know, right now, there's a lot of ambiguity. You don't know a ton of what's happening. You know, the police, by all reports, want to talk to him. Now, we're recording this on a Monday night. He's put out a statement essentially through his legal counsel. You know, his legal counsel is a high-powered attorney in Texas who also represents Jerry Jones. So he is retaining some pretty high-powered people here. Look, I think everybody feels like if he's involved in this, especially if he was a driver in the situation, it's unbelievably dumb. And he's, you would imagine, going to be facing league discipline. And if he's involved, he should be. I think people just want to kind of wait and see. Obviously, the Chiefs went out. They signed Hollywood Brown this offseason because last year it was Rashee Rice and nobody at receiver. And the thought was, well, you have Brown and you have Rashee Rice and you have Kelsey and you're good. And then they'll draft the guy in the first couple of rounds. I don't know that that's really changed him. Like, I think from the team's perspective, they'll just kind of go about their business. And if Rice isn't there for a month or a month and a half, if that's how things shake, they look at it like, well, they'll figure it out for that amount of time and they'll be okay. But it's a serious situation. And I think everybody's just kind of curious to see what the facts are.
The Bills had their version of this a few years ago. Of course, that was Doug Marone was the coach, I think. Jonah, I'm thinking of the street racing situation with Marcel Darius and Jerry Hughes, in which Marcel Darius, when schools would be letting out, I think it was like at a 3:30 or so, drove off the road at a busy intersection and hit the tree outside the Mongolian Buffet restaurant. Everybody, no, it was serious, but not too many people laughed it off. I mean, it's not, I guess street racing is one thing, but if somebody could have gotten really hurt, obviously, yeah. Well, if those videos are true, that we see of people leaving the scene.
Yes.
Do you think that's legit?
Well, I mean,
it's hard to say because whoever was doing the camera work did such a shit job. Hey, if you're at the accident, follow these people. Or look at the cars or something instead of just showing the ground. But
yeah, it's a weird, like, that's why I said I'm really waiting on a lot of this stuff, because it's just, there's so, it's like unclear and it's kind of grainy. It's almost like Bigfoot footage, right? Like you're trying to see through like a wall of water. Like, what, who is that? I mean,
somebody slapped some Vaseline on the lens.
Yeah, it's not great. I would say this, if it turns out that he's involved in any way, whether he's a passenger or a driver. Now, driver, obviously, I think most would agree is worse, but even if he's a passenger, if you left the scene of the crime, first of all, it's a crime. Second of all, it's a bad law. Okay. I would suspect that the NFL would come down hard, even if he was a passenger in this situation and he walked away. Because, you know, look, thankfully, nobody was seriously hurt. But what if somebody was? You don't know that. You don't know when you walked away. Somebody could have been dead. Somebody could have been fighting for their life. You don't know what's going on. So, and the Chiefs, let's look. Now, again, with Rice, we don't know what the facts are yet. We'll wait. But, like, the Chiefs have been no stranger to dealing with stuff off the field here. I mean, they took a chance on Tyreek Hill when Tyreek Hill had a very public and very legally solid, a legally ugly past, if you will, when he came out of West Alabama. And they took him anyway. They brought in Frank Clark when Frank Clark had a checkered past, and Frank Clark ended up getting suspended while he was on the Chiefs, and they stuck with it. I mean, this regime with the Chiefs is not afraid of off. I mean, Charles Amena, who came in, they knew he was going to get suspended. He started out as Chiefs career being suspended the first six games. Willie Gay was suspended for a month at one point, for an altercation at his home that involved him wailing a vacuum cleaner that essentially went through drywall. I mean, they are not afraid to just go, hey, if you can play, we'll tolerate some ugliness. Now, you know, there's a line for everybody, but, like, you know, they are not exactly zero tolerance in Kansas City for bad off-field behavior. Now, we'll see what happens with Rice. Maybe he's involved, maybe he wasn't, but certainly it does not look great, 48 hours or so removed from that six-car accident down in Texas.
Maybe I'll get our legal expert, Florina Altschiller, on here, who is one of the more popular guests on Tim Graham and Friends, Matt. We usually have her on to talk about things like Matt Ariza and Von Miller, so that's why she's popular. She usually will come on and shoot it straight on some tough topics.
She's a new punter, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, well, we could talk about it. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But there is some success in just acting like you weren't there. And when it comes to cars, I'm thinking of Marshawn Lynch in this situation too. Like, lawyer up and prove that I was behind the wheel.
Yeah.
I don't want to know if I want to go too far down that road, but I mean, people have had success.
I mean, listen, I, I would say this. There's a lot of unanswered questions with this whole thing. And to me, chief among them, no pun intended, is like, why did everybody walk away? I mean, you're talking about a Corvette and a Lamborghini. These were not 98, you know, Mazda Miatas. Okay, like, these are expensive cars. And you guys, like, racing like lunatics, get into an accident. You don't know how hurt people are. And everybody involved here, Rashee Rice or no Rashee Rice, just walked away from this thing. And my question to that is, Rice or not, why? I mean, were people impaired? You know, or I mean, like, were they freaked out and wanted to get the heck away from the scene as quickly as possible? And those are questions, let's be real. I don't know that you're ever going to know the answer to that question. You can't go back if you're law enforcement and say, well, we think they were intoxicated. Well, prove it.
Yeah. I mean, an average person isn't driving a Lamborghini, but let's say it's a Trans Am and a Challenger. The average person is probably sticking around, and you would think, you could probably presume to a degree of certainty that if they were to run away, it was because of, I watch a lot of live PD, a warrant, or you were impaired. But there could be a situation where these guys' default setting, and I wouldn't necessarily blame them, is we are famous. Here come people are going to whip out their cameras. I'm getting the F out of here because I'm famous. And maybe but like you say, it's fun. It's interesting to talk about.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
I had no idea we were going to talk about it.
No, but it's just one of those things. Like, it's really like, you don't know. I learned, look, Tim, you've been in this business a lot longer than I have, but I learned this when I was at Fanside in 2019, and I was just going national for us, but I was also still kind of in charge of our Chiefs coverage for Arrowhead Addict and some different things. And I remember the Tyreek Hill alleged incident where his 3-year-old son had a broken arm. And nobody really knew why, but there were allegations that he was potentially involved. And as it turned out, no criminal charges were ever filed. The DA at the time said, we think that something happened, but we can't prove it. And he never got suspended by the league. But I remember when that story broke, it was right before the draft. And everybody, including myself, went on radio or on Twitter, like, his career is over in Kansas City. Like, there's no way he can come back from this. And it kind of turned out like, it became a very odd, bizarre investigation and nothing. And to this day, I don't know. I don't know whether he's innocent or guilty, but in the eyes of the law, he was innocent. I've just learned, like, wait for the facts to come out, because sometimes things look really benign and they're really bad. And sometimes they're the complete opposite. And sometimes they're exactly what you thought they were. But it's not great if you're Rashee Rice. It wasn't exactly how you're hoping Easter was going to play out.
Did Jonah fall? Oh, I thought maybe Jonah fell asleep.
Matt, what do you think about the Bills offseason, the few signings that they did make, and maybe even more notably the players that they lost in free agency?
You know, I think it was kind of necessary for the Bills, right? I mean, there had to be some level of a reset. And when I say reset, I don't mean like the team is going to all of a sudden, you know, have to like rebuild here. But they had guys getting along in the tooth. The safety position had to be overhauled. It just did. Hoyer and Hyde were one of the best combinations in the NFL for a long time. But I think at this juncture, it was over. You know, you'll look at Von Miller. If they could move off Von Miller, they would. They just can't yet. So they had to create some other space. I think of all the guys, you know, Tre'Davious White didn't surprise me. Morse was the only one I was a little surprised. Thought maybe they would keep him around because he's still a very good player, but I get it. He had 1 year left. He's in his 30s. I thought bringing in Curtis Samuel was a good move. I wouldn't have paid Gabe Davis, and I don't think any Bills fans were really clamoring to pay Gabe Davis. So Curtis Samuel coming in at a cheaper rate, I think he probably can produce in a similar fashion. I'd like to see Shakir continue to get increased targets. I think he's good. I think he's a productive player. But I thought the Bills, you know, this was going to be an offseason where they didn't spend crazy. They didn't, you know, throw in huge contracts. It brought back Taylor Rapp. I like that move. But I think it's time. Look, they've got to rely on some of these younger guys, especially on defense. You know, the Benfords of the world, the Terrell Bernards. Rousseau, I think it's time, like, look, make the jump. Go from being a solid player to a guy who's a double-digit sack guy. And McDermott, look, I know McDermott has his critics in Buffalo, and I get it. I'm not arguing that, but he can coach defense. He's a good defensive mind. Now, the playoffs have been a different story. The playoffs, they've been a wreck defensively, but in the regular season, they've been very good. I thought the Bills did a good job. I think overall they're the best team in the AFC East. I know there's going to be people who are going to be screaming about the Jets. The Jets have an average age of like 97. I have deep fears about the Jets on MetLife turf. And the Dolphins, call me when the Dolphins win one game that matters, ever. Because to my knowledge, it hasn't happened since Larry Zonka. So I think the Bills did well to kind of get younger, reset the books a little bit, and I still think they're a very, very dangerous team.
Quick question for Jonah. Right before you asked that question, were you or were you not asleep?
I was on my phone checking the text message I got. Okay. Did I look asleep?
Yeah, I was doing this to Matt, and I was just getting ready to make a comment, and you put your head up and asked a question. Yeah, you looked at that. I was curious and a little concerned, given recent incidents. You know, I don't know what your medication situation is. Jonah had a heart attack last month at 42.
Yeah, 6 weeks ago. Well,
in fact, maybe we shouldn't have been joking about it. Maybe I should have been like, hey, Jonah, and doing a verbal, like, tapping on your sternum type thing to make sure you were still with us.
Yeah, but no issues with narcolepsy or falling asleep in situations like this. I don't think I've ever fallen asleep on this podcast, amazingly. That would have been a first.
I'm glad you're all right. I'm glad that things are going better for you.
Thank you.
Right around the time Jonah was having a heart attack, we were eating Taco Bell at 2:30 in the morning and drinking alcohol. We found a Taco Bell in Indianapolis at the Combine, Jonah, that served not only beer, but booze. It had a liquor cabinet at the checkout. I was doing the self-checkout and it offered beer. And I'm like, well, hell, I have to. And then I went to pick them up and I noticed they had like Jameson and Jack Daniels and tequila. It was wild, man.
That's intriguing to me because I've always wondered how Baja Blast might taste with a little bit of vodka in it. And then, you know, I'd like to try that if I'm ever fortunate enough to cover the scouting combine.
Tim, you know this because I told you this. I was going to write a story on this. And I did.
We talked about it the next day.
I did write a story on it. I wrote like 2,000 words on it. And powers that be decided we're not going to go ahead with that story. But told me that next year they're sending a photographer with me to the Taco Bell.
Can I see it? Would it be proprietary violation if you were to email the story so I could at least see it?
No, I think we can make that happen.
Okay, I would love that.
I wrote like a good 1,500, 2,000 words on this. And my editor, so I didn't tell my editor before I sent it to him. I sent it to him.
It's the new 47 Prime.
Yes. And I was like, this is what I worked on. Well, you guys paid for me to be here for 5 days. And I didn't know what the response was going to be. I sent it over and he called me like 20 minutes later. And he's like, that is effing hilarious. And he put it through. And then somebody above him was like, we're not going to run that. But next year we're sending a photographer. So I was like, okay. Oh, man.
Well, I hope you just didn't, give away your scoop.
I know. I'm pissed.
While you're talking about the powers that be, you are Matt Vadaram of the Sports Illustrated Vadarams.
Either way.
Huh?
Vadarams, but sure. Yeah. Vadaram, Vadaram, you name it. I've been called everything under the sun.
Bam-a-lam, whoa, Black Betty. Yeah. Vadaram. My apologies for going too fast. I'm getting reckless. I got too excited about Sports Illustrated industry talk.
I get excited.
What's going on at Sports Illustrated?
What's not going on at Sports Illustrated really is the better. No, so,
and is it still Sports Illustrated?
Yes, 1,000%. Yes, it is still Sports. If you're a reader, consumer of Sports Illustrated, which I hope you are, and if you're not, please do so I can keep my job. You're not going to notice any difference. Like the site might get a little bit of upgrade, stuff like that. But in terms of like your readership, like you're not going to notice any difference. It is business as usual. However, what essentially happened was the company that owns Sports Illustrated, ABG, who owns many companies, they license out the rights to the name. So they license out the ability to print it in the magazine and to publish it on SI.com. And the company that had held the license for a handful of years decided in January not to continue on the payment. And so they went essentially delinquent in payment, to my understanding. And so when that happened, ABG, who owns the license, said, all right, well, now we can essentially be open for business, shop it around. And Minute Media acquired the license. And so Minute Media and I have a history because they own Fansided. I worked at Fansided for years, and I think nothing but the best of Minute Media. They were awesome when I was there. When I left, they couldn't have been more gracious. Good thing apparently didn't burn bridges, because a year later now, they are taking over the brand. And so they put out offer letters over the past week, and I was lucky enough to get one of the offer letters. So I'm going over there. So essentially, I'm leaving one, like I'll be leaving one place to join another, even though I'm staying at Sports Illustrated, which sounds ridiculous and bizarre, but welcome to the sports media world. That's how this works. Essentially, nothing for me changes except that I am now going to be a Minute Media employee once again, go from there. But yeah, if you're a reader, like, you're not going to notice. And the magazine will still be the exact same. Like I said, the website, at some point they might, they have a different operating system, so it might look a touch different. But like all the writers you're used to, all the editors, all the fact checkers, the quality of content, like that's all going to be the exact same.
Swimsuit edition, that'll stay the same?
Yes, yes. I don't work on that personally, but yes, it will stay the same. And I think the license agreement that they came to, I believe, is a 10-year agreement with the option to be a 30-year agreement. So hopefully that means a lot of stability for SI. But as far as, you know, if you're obviously you're listening to this, you're an NFL fan. Our NFL team, thankfully, entirely intact. Everybody's moving over. So Albert Breer, Connor Orr, Gilberto Manzano, myself, we will all be there to still annoy people with our takes on the NFL. So it's good. I'm glad we still have that ability.
Matt, as someone who has pennants behind him of football teams, all AFL teams too.
All AFL teams, right around the ring.
With single bar face masks.
Yep.
Is that Tony Perez over your right shoulder?
That is Tony Perez.
Tony Perez. I'm guessing I'm going to take a stab at it over your left shoulder. Is that Chuck Bednarik?
It is Chuck Bednarik.
Look at this. I am on fire. As someone who can appreciate all of that, you, I'm sure, as anybody roughly our ages, has had a dream of working for Sports Illustrated. Now, yes. It's been a little twisted, and it's not, you know, it's not like what we grew up with necessarily, but how would you describe just how freaking cool it probably has been up until, you know, turbulence notwithstanding?
Sure. Yeah.
To be able to work for Sports Illustrated and do the projects that you do, of which I was honored that you invited me to be part of your panel of the 50 greatest teams of all time. I actually got my name in Sports Illustrated because of it, right?
Yep.
Thanks to you. So anyway, what's it been like to be able to do not just to work for Sports Illustrated, but to do work in which your name is attached to it and the magazine values it?
No, Tim, no question. It was a lifelong ambition. I started reading Sports Illustrated when I was 5, and I'm 35 now. So to me, Sports Illustrated always represented the best of sports journalism. Not to say there obviously isn't some incredible journalism in other places. And as time has gone on, the internet has created more and more places for journalists to shine, which I think is awesome. But for me, I always used to read, you know, the E.M. Swifts of the world, the S.L. Prices of the world, and think to myself, like, I can't even imagine being able to get published in that magazine. And to this day, I swear to God, I think they're making a huge mistake by allowing me to publish anything in Sports Illustrated. But like, to your point of stuff over my shoulder, the one I see, but yeah, that one over there, that's the first feature I ever had in SI, which was 5 pages. It was just about the 60th anniversary of the JFK assassination and the NFL's decision to play. And, but to your point, the one I am most proud of is the project that you so graciously worked on, which was the 50 most impactful teams in NFL history. And when we ran that, so online, we ran every word, 25,000 words. We broke it up into five segments, 10 teams at a shot. In the magazine, obviously we couldn't run the whole thing. It would have been the entire magazine. But they said, hey, look, we're going to give you, at the beginning of the project, they told me, we're going to give you 4 pages in the magazine. I was like, that's great. I was thrilled. We ended up getting 16 pages for that project in the magazine, which is one of the largest spreads in the history of the company. So everybody involved with that deserves a huge amount of credit. And, you know, for Bills fans who maybe didn't get the chance to read it, it's still online. You
can just Gary Smith didn't get that kind of love.
He didn't know, and he should have. But it was...
Sometimes it felt like it, though.
Yeah, and there's a Bills flavor to it because you were involved, the Carucci's involved, who is a great guy. And now, we had the 1990 Bills were on the list, and I interviewed Thurman Thomas for it. I think that's probably the best part, at least for me, of being at SI, is the access you get because you're at SI. You know, you can call Thurman Thomas and go, hey, Thurman, I'm Matt Verderam with Sports Illustrated. I got a question. Yeah, sure, no problem. You know, and it's like, you know, Bill Polian was actually on the panel. So that's been a pleasure. And that project actually went over so well that now we're going to do another one, which I actually just reached out to you about that. I reached out to all the panelists today, most of which are coming back, which is awesome. A lot of few new ones. But being at SI allows you to do stuff like that. Whereas maybe if you're at a smaller outlet, even if you're journalistically capable of doing it, teams just won't play ball as much. So that certainly helps.
Matt, I want to talk about the new rules. Anything else you want to talk about, but we've been going at it. I know your time is valuable. We don't want to keep you all day, but at least before we let you go, we want to talk about these new rules. Can you define a hip drop tackle?
I think so, but that's not a great answer because the officials have to define it in real time. And that's what scares me. Yeah. Like I get it. You're coming up from behind a guy, a ball carrier, and you're wrapping your arms around the guy's waist and you're basically dropping all your weight behind him. I don't know how you feel.
I used to refer to that as the Tim Graham tackle. When I was playing, I was pretty scrawny. Defensive back, and my brother, who is 4 years older than me, and his friends would watch the games and laugh their asses off because some running back, I was holding on for dear life, maybe for 6 or 7 yards. I got his ass down, but
yeah, sure,
just dead weight. Hey, buddy, drag me as far as you can.
I don't know how you feel about it. I think it's an error to ban it. You get some of these people who are like, you know, from like BC who just say, oh, you know, it's soft now. I would challenge any of those people. You think the NFL is soft? Stand on a sideline of an NFL game and watch it and tell me you think it's soft. That being said, I don't think it helps player safety. I really don't. Like, I think what's going to happen now is more defenders who have less ways to get a guy to the ground legally are going to just say, look, if I can't grab him by the waist, I'm just going to dive at their legs. Like, I got to get him down somehow. And maybe, you know, you're fortunate you're able to throw your arm out, but maybe it's from the side. You kind of got to dive at the guy's knees or dive at the guy's ankles. And then that's going to lead to problems. Like, at some point, you just have to realize you can't legislate tackling out of football. You just can't. Like, guys have to get tackled. I know it sucks that occasionally a guy gets rolled up on. It happens. It is the NFL. You've talked to more players than I in my career, but we've all sat in locker rooms, and guys will tell you, I'd rather you hit me high than hit me low. Don't hit my knees. That's the biggest – I mean, that is the thing. Now, you could argue, hey, long-term, you're better getting hit in the knee than you are getting hit in the head. And I think we all agree there needs to be, you know, head-to-head contact out of the game safety. But I just think getting rid of the hip drop tackle, A, I think is going to be a crap show with the officiating. It's just going to be, well, was he behind them? Was he to the side of them? Did he drop balls? I mean, you know some teams getting screwed in a huge spot next year because of that. And B, I just think it's going to lead to other kinds of hits that people don't like. Like, it's not like the defender's going to just, like, let him go by. He's going to throw himself at the guy one way or the other. So I don't think it's going to serve the purpose that the NFL is hoping it does.
Did you, either of you, in over the past year or two hear much complaint from locker rooms and players about this tackle? Because it seems to me I didn't hear too much about it until I started hearing on TV that it was, you know, a dangerous play that needs to be legislated out of the game.
That's when I started hearing about it almost, and I don't want to say it's a not a conspiracy, isn't quite the way I'm, but almost like content driven. Like it came up as something that we should talk about because we can, and we can sound smart about it because this is something you've never heard about. So we're going to be the ones to tell you about this hip drop tackle. And it kind of got into as like kind of a quirky little thing. And now I talked to Sean McDermott about it. He's on the competition committee. I was at the owners' meetings last week and caught him at the hotel after the rule had been adopted. So it wasn't something that was just being discussed. It was once it was for sure that the hip drop tackle was banned. I asked him what he thought about it. And he said that he likes that the NFL has banned it because, and this was his words, he says the data was disturbing. But he also admitted that it's going to be incredibly difficult to legislate. The officials are going to be in a tough spot. The NFL is winging it to a degree on this. Now, I also asked Sean, I said, because I write for a Bills audience, I wanted to be able to, at least anecdotally, say, here's an example of a hip drop tackle that you as a Bills fan probably remember. And I said, Sean, can you remember one? Because I don't. And he was like, no. He says, I'm having our people look at, he says, I'm having our people look into it to see if a hip drop tackle has ever, you know, drastically reduced the number of games played by, and how many of our players have missed time because of a hip drop being, you know, hip drop tackled. And he's like, I don't know. But the NFL, whatever. So anyways, now this is a little conspiratorial in me. This is cynical. I don't want to say it's conspiratorial. I think it's cynical of me. I wonder if the hip drop tackle is one of the chips that is played so the NFL can say health and safety, we have to do what's best for our players. Oh, by the way, we're going to have a couple of games on a Wednesday this season.
Yeah. That,
you know, so that way it's, but it allows, there's like a give and take, like a, yeah, but look at all the things we are doing here to make sure these guys, even though they're going to play three games in 11 days.
Yeah. In December.
Right.
When they're physically beat to hell.
Hey, is guys, that wrong of me to be cynical about that?
No, it's not wrong to be cynical. And I'm not ever really like the tinfoil hack, although you're not being here either. But I don't think it's cynical. I think it's honest. And I think the reality is like the NFL, okay, let's just call it what it is. The NFL cares about player safety until it's not convenient. And then they really don't care all that much. Okay. The idea that the NFL is like, hey guys, listen, we got to make sure that the players are safe. The NFLPA put out a statement saying they didn't want the hip drop tackle banned. Like the players are not asking for this because I think they know that it's going to lead to other stuff. And I think to officiate this is going to be a nightmare. Like, I almost wonder if it's one of these things that gets officiated to hell in the preseason, and then you very rarely see it called during the regular season. Maybe that's not the case, but
the old National Hockey League approach to officiating.
If you touch a player with your stick, it's hooking until October, in which case, go for it.
And then in April, you're allowed to hit them with it.
Right. Whatever it takes, it's for the cup. Although as a Devils fan, it won't be for the cup. They'll be golfing.
Devils fan, you've seen them harass and assault their way to a handful of Stanley Cup.
A near dynasty. Big fan of the Rolls.
The left wing mall that was so beautifully executed for, you know, to bring generations of fans to the game.
Hey, huge fan. Went to all the parades in the Meadowlands parking lot. I was there. You got to love Jersey. Every other city in the world, hey, we'll have the parade downtown. New Jersey, let's just host it at Brendan Byrne Arena. We got nowhere to be. In any event, yeah.
Trenton was booked that day.
The Trenton, yeah. Patterson, no chance. I remember, what was it? God, now it's probably almost a decade ago. They made the rule in the NFL that it still stands on the books. I don't think it's been called in 5 years, where you can't like lower your head to initiate contact as the ball carrier. And they called that in the preseason. And then we got to the regular season and that rule just went away. because they were like, this is a nightmare to try to figure out when it's a penalty and when it's not a penalty. You just couldn't.
And we'll have to scrub all the Earl Campbell and Walter Payton highlights from the NFL Films vault.
Yes. Isaiah Robertson still going backwards from getting his getting a helmet put in his chest in the Astrodome. I just think it becomes so difficult. But the thing that drives me nuts, and you said it, and I tweeted about this at the time, the NFL will come out and say, hey, you know, it's player safety. We got to take care of these guys now. And then, hey, we know Christmas is on a Wednesday, but screw you guys. We're going to play anyway. Which I'm sure, by the way, I'm sure Adam Silver was thrilled to death. Probably looked at the calendar this year and was like, hey, we're in the clear. Nope. No, you're not. And now your ratings are 50% what they should be. But yeah, if I'm a player, so the week prior, if you're playing on Christmas, you're going to be playing on a Saturday. So you have a short week that week, and then you have a short week going into Christmas. So if you're a team that is competitive in December, you're at a massive disadvantage in those two games. Yeah, sure, you get a mini bye and whatever the hell else, but like you're at a massive disadvantage those 2 weeks, especially if you got to travel those games. Like, selfishly, can I just enjoy Christmas, please? Like, I don't have to be sitting here watching Giants-Eagles as Daniel Jones is throwing 5 picks, and I've got to write a column where I'm just ripping Daniel Jones for 1,000 words. The NFL, I get it. You're always going to expand. That's fine. But, like, it's a Wednesday. Like, maybe just give it a rest for one calendar year, but apparently not.
Another thing I find odd about the hip drop tackle is that, if I'm not mistaken about this, it's still a legal play in college football, high school football, maybe even, you know, youth players can get away with it. Tim is teaching kids on his block how to do that and, you know, pick up games. And you would think,
hey, look, I will be the first to admit that if I ever watched myself play football, I would hate me. I would be like, look at this pussy. He just wants to catch the ball, throw the ball, run with the ball. He wants no business of making a tackle. You can tell he's waiting for a teammate to show up just one half step sooner on that tackle. You know, that was Tim Graham.
Hey,
he could throw it, he could catch it, but none of that other shit.
I thought he just jumped over everybody. He never got that, tackled.
I could do the fun stuff. But at my school, you had to play both ways. I could do the fun stuff. I didn't want to do the hard shit.
That's why I played hockey and baseball. Football.
Hockey, the easiest of all sports.
I can't run. I'm even as a kid, I was the slowest person alive. So it was like, I could catch. I really did have good hand, but it didn't matter because I couldn't run. So I was like, well, you know what? You know what position I don't have to run at? Anything with skates or playing catcher in baseball, because I'll just gun somebody out at second base and we're good. Like, I like the mental side of it. I want to throw somebody out. I don't mind standing there getting run over if there's a play at the plate once or twice a year. But if you're asking me to leg out a triple, we got a problem. Like, it's about to be 2 bases, boys. It's going to be a double. So the most shameful thing that's ever happened to another human being is I hit an inside the park home run in high school. And I got to tell you, that team, there should be prison time involved. The fact that I was able to run 360 feet before you threw me out without error, not like one of these like little.
I thought you were going to say the most embarrassing thing for you was being thrown out at first on a ball that trickled into the outfield or something.
Should definitely have happened, but
sharp single to right, and you were thrown out at first.
Hit easily should have happened at some point in my high school career. Never did, thankfully. But no, the fact that a team of 9 able-bodied human beings allowed me to hit an inside-the-park home run in high school. That's rough. That deserves, like, a federal investigation. But it happened. I don't know if there's video proof of it anywhere, but it did happen.
What do you think, because Tim and I had this discussion the other night about what was maybe the hardest sport to play, and the two sports that you say you played were where we came down on this. I won't say which one of us had which, but which of those two sports, or maybe a different sport, you think is the hardest one to play?
I think, like, at the highest level, I think hockey's just ridiculous. Like, hockey at that level, like in high school, it's hard in the sense that you've got to be able to skate proficiently in a variety of different ways. And it's like, for me, I was like your prototypical, I was just a power forward. I was a 6'2", 205-pound winger in high school who just if there wasn't a path, like I was going to make one. That's pretty much it. Like, I think at that level, it's not nearly as skill heavy as it is, obviously, as you go up. Whereas like baseball at the high school level, I think might be harder in the sense of, depending, of course, where you're playing. I mean, I grew up in New York. Like, you weren't playing with kids in Florida and California and Texas who were, you know, populating all the D1 schools. I played in a section that maybe one or two kids went to college and played. But like, if you got a kid who could throw a really good slider, a really good curveball, you know, and throw it, you know, 88 miles an hour, like for me that was harder than playing hockey. But I think hockey at the highest level, I think, is the hardest one.
My answer was baseball, for the purpose of the concept of the five tools. Now, you can obviously say there are different tools, but I think that if you're good at a couple of things in hockey, and again, I'm being overly simplistic here, if you're a good passer in hockey, you're probably a good shooter. If you're a good, you know, there are different things, hand-eye coordination, whereas in baseball, you have to be, the hand-eye is insane, as it is in hockey, yes. As it is in hockey.
No, but it is in baseball.
But yeah. You need an arm. You don't need an arm in hockey. You don't need speed. Obviously, you could say yes, you do need speed, and
especially nowadays.
So, anyways, that was just my, and I was a few drinks in. I wasn't necessarily the sharpest of orators at the time when Jonah and I were having this discussion, but that was my pick for the night, and it might change. Yeah. If we have this discussion again,
I think baseball. The one thing I, no, the one
or
the
basketball. One,
no, basketball. I mean, two basketball. Like, are you 6'8"? Because if you're 6'8", like, you kind of got a built-in advantage there. I will say this for baseball. I think it depends on the position you play. You know, if you're a first baseman, to me, that's not as hard as being the guy who's on third base. That ball is a rocket. You know, or like your
Steve Balboni was, you know, he looked like somebody you'd see
athlete
down at the
time,
local
yeah.
lanes.
Because that's the one thing I do appreciate about baseball, especially like we were talking about baseball cards before we came on, like old school guy. Like Boog Powell was just, it was like, that's fine. He can play him in the infield. It's okay.
Did you notice this? Is that just a name you picked?
Name I picked completely out of the dark. Yeah. Did not notice that. Honest to God. That's awesome. Look at that.
Boog Pyle, this is on here because my dad took me to a card show in Strongsville, Ohio, when I was probably 11.
There you go.
Boog Pyle was signing autographs.
Boog in the twilight of his career.
Yes, you know, because it was a Cleveland signing, so it's not Orioles Boog. But yeah, that sits there. It reminds me of my dad.
There you go. But like, it's just so funny. Like you look at guys in baseball. Like, David Wells was a really good pitcher for a long time. David Wells, by his own admission, was just a disaster health-wise. Like, just drinking and getting in late and eating what he wanted. Like, you can't do that. Not to say you got to have a six-pack to play hockey, but, like, you know, we're baseball.
Think of all the baseball players who notoriously smoked during games.
Chain smoking. Yeah, like, it's just like
Dave Parker, Keith Hernandez.
You know?
I mean, there's just a bunch of them.
That being said, I do agree with you. Hand-eye-wise, that is by far, like, I remember years ago I sat behind home plate at New Yankee Stadium, just for a Yankees Mets. It was an old timers day and then the game. And Phil Hughes was pitching a Jose Reyes to lead off the game. And I was five rows back. We got the seats from my buddy's company. And he threw what would be described as a hanging curveball, although to a normal person, it was a ball that was thrown about 80 some odd miles an hour and had a hook to it. And Jose Reyes hit it like 20 rows deep into right field. And it was like, for him, that's a batting practice pitch to crush. I could have swung at that pitch 100 times. And if I hit it like four times, I would have been thrilled to death. It just got like baseball. You know, you get the old, oh, he has a hanging curveball. It's like, yeah, but he didn't know it was coming. He still had to.
There's that part of it too.
And hammer it. You know, if I sat there off a batting practice, you know, in a batting cage and took 90-mile-an-hour fastballs 100 times, okay, I could time it up and hit it. The problem is that you don't know that that's a pitch that's coming. You don't know where it's coming. That's the thing that amazes me when guys can do. Of course, now everybody in baseball hits 210 in pursuit of hitting 60 home runs. But, yes, there used to be an actual art form to hitting a baseball.
So given your size and speed considerations,
yeah, awesome, correct.
You would be for the new kickoff rule in the NFL because you only need to line up 5 yards away from the other guy.
Correct.
All right. So long time friend. He's an F, TGAF, Tim Graham and Friends. He is a certifiable. Oh, wait. Yeah, that I guess accurate. Certified and certifiable F. Joe Lazito listens to every episode, and he has been a guest on the show. Says that he's waiting for us to tell him. I'm talking to you, Jonah, but we have Matt Verderam on here with us. He's going to help us to explain the kickoff rule and whether or not he's supposed to like it. What do we think?
Well, there's a lot to explain with the new kickoff rule.
It's tough to explain without visuals. So I think maybe
really
we skip that part other than to say the basics of it.
Essentially, look, the kicker's still at the same spot. And the coverage team, the other 10 players on the kickoff team, are lined up, I believe, with the 40-yard line, the opponent's 40-yard line. And they have to wait until the ball is contacted to take off. The receiving team, their players are lined up from the 35-yard line and back. And so essentially what they're trying to do is they're trying to get more returns in the game without that kamikaze-style collision, which is taken out of by the fact that you're not running extra 30 yards. If the ball lands in the end zone or goes through the end zone, the ball then goes to the 30-yard line. And if it hits in the field of play and then bounds through the end zone or is downed in the end zone, the ball goes to the 20. So you're incentivized if the ball is – first of all, if you're kicking, you're incentivized not to kick in the end zone. And you no longer have the ability to fair catch the ball in the field of play. If you catch it, you got to go with it. So I think, look, you're going to see a lot of returns. Now, I would argue if you're facing a team that has no offense, just boom it through the end zone. I don't care. Give them the ball at the 30. They stink. They're not going 70 yards. Like if you're facing Mac Jones, you just boom that bad boy right through the end zone. If you're facing Mahomes or Josh Allen, you might say, hey, let's try to hang it high at like the 2-yard line and tackle the returner at the 15 or the 16-yard line and make the guy have to go an extra 15 yards. I like it. Look, I am very much a traditionalist, but the kickoffs become completely legislated out of the game. I don't mind them trying it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I think it's a worthwhile endeavor to see how it'll play out.
Do we have any sense if this will – does it favor the return team or the coverage team, or will there be any differences in how easy it is to break off, long returns and touchdowns?
Well, I talked to Sean McDermott about that at the owners' meetings. His belief is that it's going to be a lab. It's going to be an incubator in which everybody's going to be stealing another team's ideas, and probably not until the regular season begins because teams will keep it under wraps. You're going to have in the preseason games guys who aren't even going to make the team. So even if you are trying some of your techniques or strategies, you're doing it with guys who aren't going to be on your game day roster. So it's going to be a lesser quality of player out there trying to pull it off. But I think so you mentioned the word traditionalist, Matt, and I agree that this is going to look radical. But there's a traditional aspect to keeping the kickoff return in the game. I think it would be more radical to just eliminate it, although it seems like that's what they were trying to go for a while. I'm glad to see it be salvaged. And the reason I'm ramping up to that is two things. Sean McDermott had also mentioned that he thinks more star players who were reluctant to take those kamikaze style hits and teams who were reluctant to put high priced players back there are going to be more willing to do so because the risk of injury is way down with this format. And so maybe you see James Cook back there for the Buffalo Bills or Tyreek Hill, or, you're going to see guys say, yes, give me that chance to do it. And then the other part, too, that I think if you can picture how the setup is going to be, you make one man miss and you might be gone. And
oh, no doubt.
We can so there's one level to get through. It's not a schmozzle of bodies all around the field. You get past one or two guys, you might be gone. Which leads me to another part. That poor kicker. He's going to be the only one back there. What do you tell your kicker to do in that situation? Bail? Do you want him to try to make that tackle? Do you
probably not
get into a situation where you have a skilled player perhaps kick off, and let your kicker kick the field goals and extra points? I know I'm getting way down, but fun to think about.
It's not so. I will say that, and this is just something that came to mind when you said that. So last season, not this past year, the year prior, the Chiefs opened the season in Arizona on what everyone now knows is a wonderful playing surface. And Harrison Butker led off the year, kicks off, and blows out his hamstring and is out for 2 months. And, of course, like every other team in the league, they don't have another kicker. So now it's like, well, the punter's got a kick. And well, as it turned out, Justin Reed, their safety, is actually also a kicker. And he was kicking extra points, and he was bombing kickoffs through the end zone. And I do think to your point, like if you have a guy, like if you're the Chiefs, I probably would have Justin Reed kick the ball off for kickoffs, right? I mean, I want my safety
It's got to be short anyway, right? Like, if short to keep it in the field of play, and you got a guy back there who can make a tackle maybe.
The only question I'd have about it is like with Justin Reed, he could bomb it through the end zone, but does he have the like ability to put it inside the 5 yard line? You know, that's where like Harrison Butker, I know, could probably sit there in his sleep and do that. Right. Like, can you get that same kind of precision? But it is interesting, you know, and here's another question I have about this. Do you go with more directional kicking? Do you try to put the ball on the, you know, let's just say on the left third of the field and, you know, you try to converge and pin the guy down into that corner? Because you're right. I mean, there's going to be opportunities here where if you create a seam, the guy's gone. I mean, there's nobody back behind it. It'll be very, especially early on. I think eventually people will probably devise different schemes to kind of try to figure this thing out. But look, it's a good thing for the players. Like, you're lessening injuries. You're getting more excitement in the game. Cordarrelle Patterson got signed immediately after that went into effect. Right. Immediately signed by Pittsburgh. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. I like it.
Here's another fun thought, or a dumb thought. I don't know. But because we don't know, really, other than what we've seen out of the minor leagues, how this works. But you're talking about a totally different degree of player in the NFL since we've been talking about hockey. What about having different units? I'm going to have a size unit. I'm going to have a speed unit. And maybe it even gets into a part where a team has to see who else is out there. Maybe you put your unit out there first and you could counter. You got a speed, you know, or you got your big dudes out there and we're going to steamroll you. We're going to, you know, try to tackle us. Try to make a tackle when we have our starting offensive line and a couple of D-line guys out there. I don't know. What are you going to do when you only got 5 yards to get past them? Or you go with the speed guys and be like, well, try to block us. You can't catch it. You know, I don't know. But there could be some gamesmanship there with totally different units. You only have 5 yards to make your move and to make a block.
I wonder if you almost like – I'm trying to think. This rule obviously is new for all of us. Do you have to line everybody up on the 40, or can you line guys up as well, like on the 45?
All right, so I'm going by memory here.
Setup zone.
Yeah, there's the kicking team has to have everybody on the line, I believe. So that's 10 guys.
Okay.
The receiving team has to have, I think, at least 9, meaning you could have to return. I think it's the way that the terminology is a minimum of 9. That means you can put a 10th up there or you can have a second one back.
I wonder if,
but please, if you're listening to this, double check my math.
If you're the kicking team, I wonder if you tell, hey, look, we're going to send 5 guys as soon as we possibly can. And then the other 5 guys go like a half second after. You almost stagger the waves of guys as you're trying to create some kind of a way to
run backwards, like an outside linebacker who's dropping into pass coverage,
like just basically create room to get past blocks. I mean, it's going to be very interesting. It really is. It's going to be very, and you're going to have some teams to figure it out better, and you're going to have some teams to give up six returns for touchdowns this year. And then you're going to see those teams kicking the ball and saying, hey, take it to 30. But it's going to be interesting. Look, if nothing else, it's going to be a play that's intriguing in a way that it has not been in recent years. You're just sitting there going, okay, yeah, it's basically part of the commercial break. Now it's part of the game, and I think that's a good thing.
I do too. What else we want to, anything else? Anything else we want to get at here? Let's mop up a little bit.
I got nothing.
Matt Araiza, is he the punter?
Yes, he's the punter.
Meaning
Tommy Townsend is off to Houston.
Well, I know that, but do you think that this means Araiza is their punter?
Yes, yes.
I know he's the only one on the roster right now.
Yeah, I think he is, unless something like, you know, unforeseen happens yet.
Yeah.
I think he's the punter. I think now we're all pretty much in wait and see mode for all these teams with the draft. We got, what, 3.5 weeks? And then it's basically summer vacation, except for a couple OTAs here and there and a mini camp. And then, you know, I start my training camp tour in late July, early August, which I enjoy thoroughly.
Will you be at St. John Fisher?
I am going to campaign to be at St. John Fisher. So last year.
Or at least the Bills, because they're only there for a couple of weeks. You might get them in Orchard Park.
So
and still right, have yeah, it be technically true. Training camp.
So what we did last year is myself, Connor Orr, Albert Breer, and Gilberto Manzano, our four-man team at SI, we covered all 32 teams with each of us having like a geographical zone. I'm based outside Chicago. So I did the Midwest, which was the entire NFC North, the Colts, the Bengals, the Browns, and the Chiefs. But I would be more than happy to swing from Cleveland up to
Buffalo.
You
get to the Browns, you're already there.
Right, right.
Come from Detroit.
I could.
4 hours through Canada, and you're right there from Detroit.
Yeah, so I would I'd like to do that. I'd like to add Pittsburgh if I can. I enjoy driving. I don't mind it. I have two young kids. I like the silence. You know, love the kids, but man, there's something about just being able to drive in peace. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I like it because it's the start of a new year and everybody's got hope. And then if you're sitting there and, you know, for my purposes, you've seen 9 or 10 teams and you're like, yeah, that team shouldn't have hope because I've seen the other teams and they're a whole lot better than this team. I remember watching the Giants last year in a joint practice with the Lions, and they were so inferior to Detroit. You're like, yeah, I don't know if they're going back to the playoffs. Seems like paying Daniel Jones might have been an error. It was an error. Turned out to be an error.
Boy. Well, Matt, thanks for doing this.
You got
Hopefully
it.
You can make it a regular occurrence. You came across my transom today, and I said, let's go. Let's do it. So yeah. I appreciate you carving out some time on short notice.
You got it. Anytime. Jonah, nice meeting you. Tim, as always, a pleasure. And I'll be following up and annoying you with the newest SI project.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I hope that you give us a list to choose from like you did last time.
I am. I have 101 candidates, I believe. I'm writing the blurb for as we speak.
Do you think you'll stop there or are you still looking?
I'm going to do the 101, I think. And then I'm going to give all the panelists, obviously yourself and everybody else, I'm going to give them the Google Doc and say, you know, here, take a week.
Just like you did with the last one.
Yeah. And if you think there are omissions, then tell me and I'll add them and then we'll all vote and we'll go from there. This time though, we're doing it in April and not in June and July because that ended up with me writing that whole thing in the middle of October. That was a poor job of planning by me. It was also because I got hired in like March. And so I didn't have quite the credibility to go to a boss high up at SI and go, listen, I really want to do this and you should trust me. Let's put it this way. I'm very thankful to you and all the panelists for the last one, the 50 most influential teams, because let me tell you, if that hadn't gone well, that was my ass because I told everybody, I'm like, I can do it. I'll get Hall of Fame players from every team. I had no idea if I could do it. I never tried to do something like that. But I'm like, got to have confidence.
Well, it paid off. You survived the regime change.
It did. It worked out. So now they're like, hey, this was great. You should do this every year. I'm like, all right, cool.
I can still say, and correctly this time, Matt Verderam of the Sports Illustrated Verderams.
Yes, correct. Correct.
And not of the Matt Verderam show, which everybody should still check out.
They should on Patreon.
And also follow Matt at, well, it's his name, Matt Verderam, just on Twitter. That's nice to have an unusual enough name that when you signed up for Twitter, you didn't have to worry much.
Didn't have to fight. No, no. I had one
There's a
person
Tim Graham in Australia who got me.
That's a shame. Got I had a guy, one guy reached out to me and has the same name. And it was like, hey, we have the same name. Blocked him immediately. Don't trust him. Worst fear is he's somehow related to me.
Screw
probably
that,
is.
Yeah. Well, it's
yeah,
your father.
Like, yeah. Well, good old Lance Verderam, who actually drove 13 hours from New York. He's in town. He just got here. But he's my youngest daughter, her birthday is tomorrow. So,
is he upstairs?
He is upstairs.
Well, you tell the old man I says hello.
I will. He's hilarious. My mom is flying in. I mean, they're just, you know, they're still married, but my mom hates to drive. My dad hates to fly. So my mom, my dad drove. And yeah, they're coming out for my youngest daughter's second birthday tomorrow and then her baptism. So big week. Big week is where, you know, fitting in some NFL stuff, you know, and
well, good. I'm happy for you, Matt. Sounds like things are falling together.
Things are going well, Tim. I appreciate it. I didn't know, but you know, I enjoyed the combine. I enjoyed getting together with you and Perino and all the rest of you Buffalonians there.
Heckling Albert Breer while he's trying to conduct business.
poor Albert. There was like six of us there at that point in the night. And Albert's trying to do an interview.
And it was four of us versus Albert, and I can't remember who he was with. He was trying to be very serious, and we weren't letting him.
Albert is the most, and I'd say this is a friend of, I mean, proud to be his friend, he's a great guy. Albert is the most professional person I've ever been around. Like,
come on.
We're walking down the street in Indianapolis talking to each other, and hey, man, what's going on? I'm like, who's that? Oh, this quality control coach for the Panthers. I'm like, how the hell do you know
that? That doesn't necessarily make Albert professional. The most professional.
You know what?
No, it doesn't,
Plugged in a better
professional.
Term?
The most professional?
Plugged in maybe is a better term.
All right. That.
It's insane.
I'll give you that.
The amount of people.
I'll give you
I'm like,
that.
How do you know who that person is?
I've seen Albert looking like us at that Taco Bell way too many times.
Well, hey, listen,
for me
I
to
can't.
Say the most professional guy I've ever seen or been around.
I can't speak to that. But Albert, you know, I give him credit. He puts up with me. He puts up with me bothering him about all things at all hours of the day and night. So, yeah, you know, God bless him. He deserves every penny SI's paying him.
That take woke me up from my nap. I heard that. I've only met Albert a half a dozen times, but I was like, wow, that's not the Albert I know.
Albert is – I've never
been
around –
Were you with us at 716, but back when it was known as 716?
I remember one night at the upstairs Marriott bar, which might be that same night or something related to that. But, yeah, I remember when he was covering the Patriots, maybe more so, that when Albert's been in town, we've gone out a number
Elmo's,
of times.
He's an Elmo's guy. Back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He's no, he's great.
He showed up not together, but I invited him. This was when Mike Rodak was still around. Mike Rodak, and we invited Albert Breer, and Albert showed up with some other, there were some other reporters in town that he said, I'm going to this place called Elmo's on Millersport, and they showed up, and the infamous Britt McHenry was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
Proceeded to sit there and pretend like she didn't know any of us. Good time. We'll leave it there.
That's a Matt, name I haven't heard in a really long time.
Right? Again, we'll just leave it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matt, thanks for doing this. Everybody out there, follow Matt's work on his podcast, on his Twitter, and at Sports Illustrated. Jonah, thanks. And thanks to everybody out there for listening to Tim Graham and Friends, brought to you by CTBK, CPAs and Business Consultants.
The financial needs of a business go beyond tax and attest services. That's why CTBK goes beyond accounting services and offers outsourced solutions through their affiliation with CFO Solutions Plus. These additional services allow clients to focus on their operational and long-term strategic goals. Trust CTBK's outsourced solutions to provide cost-effective, value-added financial services tailored to your company's needs. call CTBK at 716-630-2400. Again, 716-630-2400. Or go to ctbk.com to learn more about CTBK's outsourced solutions.